welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com. It is the 4th of March 2014 and this is episode 178 of the podcast. Now today I have an interview with Mark Lefebvre from Kobo and we're going to talk about how merchandisers, because Kobo has merchandising and we'll explain about that, how their merchandisers spot a gem for promo opportunities, as well as some of the news you'll be interested in around Kobo Next, foreign stores and their new Japanese CEO and the Sony deal. So all of that's coming in the discussion with Mark. And of course, Kobo do sponsor the podcast, but I am also a massive fan of Mark personally, as well as he's a great writer as well. We talk a bit about his dual roles as an author. So that's coming up. Some news, I guess, in the publishing industry. Probably the news that's most affecting people right now, that people are talking about, is the ACX, which is Amazon's audio creation exchange through Audible, has lowered royalty rates already, and people are worried about what that means for indies. As in, does that mean that Amazon will lower the rates for ebooks? Well, I personally think there's a big difference between ACX and KDP, and that is that there are other games in town to Amazon KDP. Amazon does, definitely is the dominant player in the ebook space, but in other markets other than the US, Kobo is, sometimes dominant. iBookstore is dominant in other places. Google Play is kind of dominant other places. And there's plenty of countries in the world where there are completely things we've not even heard of yet. Whereas ACX is basically the only game in town in terms of an easy collaborative audiobook production service. So I don't necessarily see that it means the end of a 70% royalty with Amazon, but it definitely does mean that narrators are less likely to work for a royalty share with indies, because it will mean less money, and the risk, the risk reward ratio has to be sort of finally determined for them to do stuff for free, basically in the hope of getting royalties. So that's probably the biggest thing that's going on in the last couple of weeks. Anyway, my news, I have finished the draft of Delirium, and it's printed. It's on my desk, buried now under some other things, but it's got a date of March 31st on. So essentially, I'm resting it for a month before I start the rewrites. I need it. I'm going to write a kick-ass Viking novella to clean my palate as such. I've been reading way too much Anne Sexton poetry on suicide and madness, and I've got a couple of poetry collections on my desk right now. One is the Anne Sexton Complete Poems, another one is Beyond Bedlam, which is poetry from people suffering mental illness, and Charles Bukowski, The Pleasures of the Damned. So those are the things that's been my some of my light reading. I've been reading a lot more poetry as part of my writing practice. I find it really helps me with language and just ideas and things. So I'm trying to, read a bit of that every day. But yeah, too much Anne Sexton, death and madness, and it's about time I blew stuff up. So there's a Viking exhibition at the British Museum, starts this week, so I'm going to go to that and use that as a starting point for a novella. So that is coming. Yes, the Deadly Dozen. Now, this is probably the most exciting thing in my life at the moment. I did my own super big promo on the blog's 24th of February, which went really well and managed to shift us up the charts. So thank you if you bought Deadly Dozen on that day and went in with the prize draw. Deadly Dozen is currently right now at number 39 in the whole of the US Kindle store and in the top 10 for mystery and thriller. It's top 10 on iBookstore, top 5 on Barnes & Noble Nook, top 5 thriller with Kobo, and we made the daily deal yesterday with Kobo, so that was amazing. And I've just seen we're in Steve Berry's newsletter, and if you're a thriller writer, you will know Steve Berry. You know, that's pretty amazing, as he is, I guess he'd be like an A-list thriller writer. He's the Uber League. My big learning from this experience, and I've said this so many times before, is that networking is so important. And I wouldn't even have had the opportunity to be part of this collection without meeting people online and in person at conferences. Plus, having a platform that people want to work with, which of course is over five and a half years now of, or five, just over 5 years worth of, me putting in the time. I don't know. It feels like you never know when things will happen. You never know who you're going to meet or how people will find you. So, always connect. That's probably a good thing to say. In terms of Deadly Dozen, it is still for sale. It's up at 49 cents right now. It's been price matched with something, and it's certainly 49p in the UK, and it's 12 books, 12 thrillers, mystery and thriller, several New York Times bestselling authors and USA Today bestselling authors, and my own One Day in Budapest. And we are having a launch party with a giveaway of an iPad Air. And this is only valid until Saturday, March the 8th. So if you've missed that, sorry, and that is 2014, Saturday, March the 8th, 2014. If you are listening to that to this before Saturday, 8th of March, 2014, then you can enter to win an iPad Air. Go to thecreativepen.com/deadlydozen. And you'll be redirected to the competition to win an iPad. And if you are in any country that Apple serves, you can enter that. You can also still find the Deadly Dozen in all of the ebook stores for very cheap. So, go get it while it's there. And the price will be back to $9.99 once all of our promo stuff is done. So that's cool. So yeah, lots going on really. And I'm on other things. I'm doing quite a lot of speaking. We just did a weekend at The Guardian, which was brilliant. And actually it was quite funny because on the day we had 78 people or something for a day as an intro to self-publishing, which was amazing. Some of the people I've had on the podcast were speaking with me, Orna Ross and Roz Morris, Ben Galley, Polly Courtney. We did a day and it was really positive and empowering. I think that's the word I want to use, empowering. And on the same day, I laughed, an article came out in The Guardian or The Observer, as it is on Sunday, which was called From Bestseller to Bust. And it was essentially this doom and gloom article about how writers just can't afford to live anymore. And, you know, it's all over and nobody can afford literature and readers will never find anything to read. And it was one of those sort of classic negative industry articles that, you know, it was, for me, it just was an indication that sometimes you create your own world. And you know, back a few years ago now with like The Secret and The Law of Attraction, everyone was going on about, and I take that, you know, I take about 10% of that. I believe in positive, you know, positive thinking, and but I believe mostly in acting. So, you know, positive thinking towards your dreams and then acting towards your dreams. But it was interesting because I felt that our workshop on self-publishing with those of us who were there, we live in a world which is full of people who are empowered, authors who are making money, who are writing what they want, who are reaching readers directly, who are getting paid, even if it's, you know, if it's £50 a month. That's £50 a month more than they might have ever earned with their writing. Or, you know, for people like me who a few years ago just would not be making a living this way. I mean, it's just mental. So I feel like we are, yeah, I feel like we're living in sort of parallel universes. You know, many in the publishing industry and then those of us in sort of proud indies doing our thing. So that's good. What else? I have a few sort of big things coming up. Actually today as well, I did my schedule for London Book Fair and it's going to be brilliant. I'm so looking forward to it. There's a lot of different sessions on. Bella Andre and Barbara Freethy are going to be in town, which will be great. We're going to be having a lot of indie sessions. So yeah, really excited about that. And in fact, just in general, I think 2014 is shaping up to be really brilliant. Oh, and I know, so I get emails from you guys sometimes laughing at me for my everything is brilliant stuff. So I do get that. I sometimes just, you know, I'm just an enthusiastic person, just can't help it. But yeah, by the way, you are always welcome to email me. I love hearing from podcast listeners because I know that you have to take the extra effort away from your listening to actually email me. But it is joanna@thecreativepen.com if you'd like to listen, or you're very welcome to leave a positive review on iTunes or whichever podcatcher you listen to through. Okay, let's get on with the interview with Mark Lefebvre. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com and today I'm here with Mark Lefebvre. Hi Mark.
Hey, Joanna. It's great to be back.
Yes, great to have you back on the show. So just in case anyone doesn't know who Mark is the Director of Self-Publishing and Author Relations at Kobo. He also writes horror and I was calling it dark humour under Mark Leslie. Would that be about right?
That's pretty accurate. Dark humour.
So you've got these sort of dual personalities, and we like me actually, and we're going to try and cover them both. But today, wanted to talk about some of the latest things that are going on with Kobo and publishing, I guess. So just before we start, maybe you could just introduce Kobo and what Kobo Writing Life does for authors, in case anyone doesn't know.
One of the main differentiators between Kobo and other ebook retailers is that Kobo partners with leading booksellers in territories around the world. So in Canada, it's Chapters Indigo. In the US, it's the, you know, there's over 1,000 independent booksellers who can sell Kobo books in their stores. It's WH Smith and the Indies in the UK. It is Fnac in France and Mondadori in Italy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's a cool thing about partnership and collaboration, which is part of the Kobo philosophy. And Kobo Writing Life uses that same sort of collaborative philosophy. And I know, Joanna, so for example, we worked together on a great Dan Brown promo, and that's really sort of the spirit of the collaboration that Kobo and Kobo Writing Life allow. Kobo Writing Life is not all that different than your listeners are probably intimately familiar with KDP. I like to say it's like KDP, but it's Canadian, and it's way more beautiful. And I mean, the design, I got hired as a writer to run the self-publishing program at Kobo. And so one of the joys that I had was starting from scratch and saying, what do I want as a writer? And then I spent 6 months doing what I do anyways, hanging out with writers and chatting with them and learning, well, I really want this in a platform. And what's your favorite thing? And our user experience team came up with what we think is a really slick and beautiful interface to make it easy for you to publish your work into Kobo's catalog for free. And the beautiful thing is we have authors in 156 different countries publishing in I don't know how many languages. It's got to be at least 40 different languages. And they have sold. Kobo's available in 190 countries. Kobo Writing Life authors have only so far sold in 184. So we got 6 more to go before we can say we've sold in all territories from Kobo Writing Life.
Yeah, and I mean, I was just thinking about the other day that everything moves so fast, but what people might not remember is that Kobo paid authors in their own currency before Amazon did, which was a kind of a great example of the fact that we always need, and I hate to call Kobo the number two, but you know, it's great to have a challenger to the kind of the throne as such, to keep everyone honest. And the other thing you have, which I really like, and hopefully Amazon will emulate, is the scheduling of promotions, which is quite a new thing, isn't it? They just explain that, because I think that's brilliant.
Yeah, so I mean, one of the things I look at is Amazon will often give you something, but only if you sign up for KDP Select, which, you know, I guess it does work for some authors some of the time, the 1% maybe. But for most authors, it really restricts them and locks them into a single retailer where, and I know you recognize this, that making your work available as many different places as possible gives you exposure to the widest possible audience. So we look at things that we should give to authors. And I know they have sort of a price scheduling thing in their system, but you have to be locked into the Select program to take advantage of it. So we like to look at that. We say, you want to make your book free, you can make your book free at any time, which we've done since day one. You want to schedule a price promo. And, you know, BookBub is a very popular one right now, and there are other ones out there. I like BookBub because BookBub is inclusive of all the retailers. And so I really, really like places like that where an author can do a promo and send the promo to customers across all platforms, which is good for everyone, I think. It keeps us all honest. Mm-hmm. And so the price scheduling tool in Kobo was built in. It's about 3 or 4 months old now. You can go and schedule a promo, whether it's, you know, with BookBub or a third-party company, or whether you just want to do a promo. Here's the cool thing that's important about that. If you take advantage of that as an author, sometimes updates, typically on a good day, an update will only take a 15 minutes, half an hour, a couple hours, you know, on semi-heavy traffic days, you know, 6 to 12 hours. And then when it's really, really crazy, what we call rush hour traffic, it could take significantly longer than that. Like we always say 24 to 72 hours just because we never know what the traffic will be. But if you use the price scheduling tool, that scheduled price gets downstream ahead of time. That's the person with the sleeping bag waiting outside the Bruce Springsteen concert for the doors to open. And when the doors open at midnight, the price change happens right away. And they got ahead of all the traffic. So that's one of the cool reasons you may want to use the price scheduling tool. You can take advantage of it for pre-orders, special pre-order price. When the book goes live, it's going to go back up to its regular price. Buy it now, please, which is always good for authors. But we also mine the data that you're putting in there, and we're looking for forthcoming promos that you have scheduled for our daily deal. In the UK and Canada and the US right now, and it is going to, you know, continue to expand to other territories, but those are the three prime territories that Kobo Daily Deal has launched in. And we're looking for gems. We're looking for great deals for customers. So, you know, taking advantage of those tools is good because it helps you as an author, but it may also help you even further because we may say, hey, this looks like a great promo, you know, February, you know, 14th, you know, you're doing that, or actually, sorry, we're in February now. How about March 15th? This is your, you've got something scheduled. Go, oh, we have a spot. Let's put it in there.
Mm. Yeah, and you mentioned, so I guess for people need to realize that Kobo as iBookstore, as Nook, has much more of a merchandising focus, slightly different to the way that Amazon algorithms work. So really interesting there that you talked about looking for gems. So what, and there is an active, actually people looking at Kobo for this stuff. So what is your definition of a gem? What can people do to, because, you know, everybody wants to sell more books. So what do people have to do to stand out in that kind of way?
First, they need to listen to your podcast and read everything you've ever written. and I say that jokingly, but the reality is the networking that you talk about, yes, even networking for introverts, your new book, I highly recommend everyone check that out. Being a real person. I mean, opportunity comes up when you're a real person. Now, I'm assuming you have already written the best book you can. You already have had it edited and beta read, and you already have the best cover. Now, the best cover doesn't just mean a gorgeous cover. It means a gorgeous cover that attracts your target audience. So I'm assuming you already know these things, and I'm sure your listeners know these things because you provide amazing information on that. The gem is We, as you mentioned, we have booksellers. We actually call ourselves booksellers because that's what we are. Our goal at Kobo is to put the right books in the right customers' hands digitally. And so that's why our partnership with booksellers is important, because booksellers curate. So they still have that curatorial where you walk into the store and something is recommended for you because we know that you're going to like it. We do a lot of that. So our algorithms are keyed towards helping put the right books in front of the right customers' eyes. And so when we're looking for those gems, we're looking for, well, for a price promo. If it's $2.99 and it's going down to 99 cents, well, that's not a big deal. What's the regular price? And the regular price, you know, our merchandisers say, well, if the regular price is less than $5, it's not much of a deal. It's already a deal when you compare that to the print book price or whatever. So, you know, ideally, the original price would be above $5. The sale price would be below $5, and ideally 50 to 80% off. That's a gem. With the right cover, with the right book, at the right time. And that's basically what our merchandising team does, not just for Daily Deal, which is, you know, that's the example I gave you, but for featuring a book on our website. This looks like a great book. Think of it as this is the bookseller deciding to put this book in the front window rather than that book. And I've used this example in talks I do. Here's a great book with a beautiful cover for 99 cents. And yet at the end of the day, we get to keep 30 cents of that. And there's another great book for, you know, $10. And we get to keep $3, you know, pretending for just one moment that Kobo is a business. It's really hard to pretend that, but it's true. What book are we going to put in that prime front window that will make sure that we can turn our lights on the next day? I mean, you know, bottom line is, other places may not have to sell books to make money, and they use books as loss leaders. Places like Kobo, we only sell ebooks. We have to make money off of books in order to stay in business. We don't make money off of selling readers. And we have free apps available on every platform. So the only way that we really bring in money is by selling books and hopefully selling the right book to the right customer at the right time.
Mm. And I think this is important for people to realize that essentially, I mean, we all have to keep the same pricing across all the platforms because
that's
of
right.
all the price matching stuff. But the way that I feel that it's going right now is that perhaps full-length books should be... I mean, we will, you know, it used to be that they were $2.99. Now, pretty much most people are at $4.99. But it's almost like you're saying, you know, a full-length book should be $5.99. And I know Chris Rush and Dean Wesley Smith are going for like $7.99.
That's too cheap for them.
Yeah, I know. Are we at the point now where indies are better to have some free products and some higher priced products and just forget the middle ground entirely? Or what, you know, what, where are you falling on the pricing? I mean, what do you do as an author, as Mark Leslie?
You know, it's interesting. I, as an author, as Mark Leslie, have had some success with digital chapbooks. One of my best selling book is Bumps in the Night, which is four short stories. It's about 12,000 words. Stories meant to be told around a campfire, so it's a very specific theme. I didn't have enough to make it a full-length book. I sell that for $2.99, but but I make it very, very clear to the people who are looking for the big, you know, novels for a buck or $2.99. I make it very clear in the synopsis that this is not a full book, and it's continuing to sell. It's getting good reviews. People are liking that. The best price is somewhere between here and here, depending on your genre, depending on, I mean, I can't give one pat answer. The best possible price is the price by which you sell the highest volume, right, and make the most margin at the same time. And for different titles, it's different. Now, you talked about free. I think you should have some books that are introductory priced books where they're either at the low end of the spectrum to say, hey, you know, price up a cup of coffee, or it's free, come check me out. And we have seen at Kobo conversion rates as high as 56% going from free to paid. And it's interesting. So when you look at some of the stats, I'll just share one of them with you. We looked at a particular book that was first book in series and then all the rest of the books in the series. And the download stats were such that 12,000 people downloaded the first book. Then we looked at how many people bought, how many of those people bought anything else. And the conversion rate was like 1.6%, which is pretty standard. But then let's peel away here and look at the details. of the 12,000 people, how many people actually open the book? People take stuff for free all the time and never read it. Only 3,000 people of the 12,000 open the book. Okay, that's cool. Of those 3,000 people, how many finished reading the book within a two-week period? Meaning they really liked it. And most people are slow readers, so a book a month is usually pretty good. So within a two-week period, they finished reading the book. And how many of those people went on to buy one or more books in the series? And that's where we saw a conversion rate of 56%, meaning those are your target people. There's a whole bunch of other people who took it because it was free, and they may never – like I write horror. If you grab my free horror book and you don't like horror, well – you shouldn't do that. Don't waste your time. You're just going to give me a one-star review anyways. So there are opportunities to get people. We call it the gateway drug or the crack theory of selling books, where you get a reader in, they check it out, they love you to death, and then they move on. I mean, you're participating in the Deadly Dozen. Is that what it's called? Mm-hmm. And the same idea, right? So there are other authors who are in that, their fans may go, hey, who's this J.F. Penn? Check it out, and then go and check out all your other books because they fall in love with your writing. And that's with the low price point, and that's what free does. And that's how it works at Kobo anyways. And that's why we have a first free in series promo that we have launched and we're pushing. And even we've put people on the list, and we haven't really pushed it that hard yet. I got an email back from an author who we just threw into the list 3 weeks ago, and she goes, cool, my sales have just started to ramp up. And all we did for her is we threw her first book free in series and put her on that list, and then the rest of her books took off. Mm. Now, maybe something else happened at the same time, but I'm seeing more and more of that relationship happening. So we're seeing that, yeah, people check it out. They like it. They go on and buy it.
It doesn't matter so much for the individual. I guess what I'm asking, Mark, is you remember Mark, the other Mark, Mark Coker, wrote a free book called Ebook Publishing Success. We would like one of those, Kobo Ebook Publishing Success, with a kind of a roundup of it. And I know I've seen a lot of people from Kobo speak, and you guys are really good at sharing data. People would like to know, I guess, how to spark Kobo sales. But I want to change direction with some new stuff that's going on. So recently, Sony has thrown in the towel, let's say, and handed its customers over to Kobo. So what does that mean for authors and people who were readers on the Sony Reader?
Well, I think it's good news for the readers, because those readers who are with Sony have now a much larger catalog and a more robust ecosystem. It's been a lot of work working in the background, because I'm part of the content team, trying to make sure that we have all of the stuff that existing Sony customers had, so that as they migrate into the Kobo ecosystem, that they still have those books. And that's been sort of a fun, interesting challenge to do. The other thing, this is important for me when I look at Sony and Kobo and places like Nook, and even to some extent iBooks, all use EPUB standard format. So provided that you don't choose the strict DRM methods when you're publishing through Kobo, you could purchase a book from Kobo and read it on a Nook. Then previous, you read it on, now you easily read it on a Sony because it'll automatically be in your Sony catalog. But now you would be able to sideload it to your Sony and even open it up in iBooks because it recognizes EPUB. So I think that's an exciting thing. Sony was, the first e-reader I had ever bought. My PSR was at a 510, and I mean that was back in the day when e-books were $30. That was the standard price for it. They were more than the hardcover book, and so I'm just speaking Canadian dollars. But I think it's a good thing. I think the customers who went to Sony, they had a good product. They had a decent ecosystem. They were one of the first players on the board. you know, merging our businesses together so that the Sony customers can have more. I think that's a great opportunity as we move forward. I'm really excited about that.
No, me too. And, you know, for all of us on this end of the game, loading up to all these different sites is just, you know, a pain in the ass. And of course, you can go through Smashwords or whatever, but we all like to control our own stuff. So I like that. And the other one, of course, is Nook, who still don't allow non-US authors to publish through Nookpress. And we, I mean, where there's all kinds of news about Nook. Do you have any, obviously not Kobo's opinion, but any kind of opinion on what's happening with Nook?
You know, personally, as a writer, I hope Nook sticks around for a long, long time. I personally, as a writer, as a Canadian, I'm really, really frustrated because they have this great new product that they launched, but I can't use it. It's like ACX. It's a great product, but, you know, I can't use it. And so that's a frustration. And I wonder, because they're really smart people who work there, and I really wonder why they're making these decisions when they have an opportunity to continue to grow, that they're not taking it. And I don't know why that is. It frustrates me, because I think it's important for there to be several players out there giving customers and writers as many options as possible.
So watch this space for Nook. You know, every month goes by and something else happens, so it wouldn't, you know, we just don't know. But another news, there's loads of news at the moment that I wanted to talk to you about. I think it's a replacement of the Canadian CEO at Kobo by a Japanese CEO. And I know that Rakuten owns Kobo, and they're a Japanese e-commerce retailer, a massive one. And personally, I'm kind of excited about this, because it seems to suggest that maybe Kobo is looking at the Far East. You know, do you have any personal thoughts on that whole area of things?
Yeah, so Mike Cerbenis, the founding CEO of Kobo, an amazing man, an incredible leader. He has put together a vision, you know, decades-long vision of the transformation of our publishing industry. Mike has put together an amazing executive team. Like, you've met Michael Tamblyn, who is our chief content officer and sort of our commander-in-chief for the content team. And there's a great vision put together, startup company that has now been purchased by an amazing, you know, global company like Rakuten. I mean, Rakuten owns Pinterest and a whole bunch of other amazing companies. Kobo is one of the amazing companies. And so we're on the path to greatness. So Kobo's, our new CEO, Taka Akai, he has a tremendous reputation for getting results. So he has that drive that is very Kobo. Kobo does have very ambitious plans, not just in Asia, but around the globe. As you know, we are a global company, and we're going to continue to do that. I mean, I'm really, really excited. I haven't yet met him yet, because I'm actually on the West Coast in the U.S. at a writer's conference right now, and he's in Toronto at our head office. And so I haven't had a chance to meet him, but we're really, really excited to work with Taka. We're entering yet another new phase of growth for Kobo, and we're really, really excited about that. So lots of things going on, lots of opportunity. I mean, I think it was that CEO announcement and the Sony announcement happened within, what, a day of one another?
I think it's very exciting, and I tell people all the time that in November 2013 I sold books in 30 countries through Kobo, which I am thrilled about, including Burkina Faso, which I just love, because, you know, Burkina Faso, if people don't know, is in West Africa, and I was just like, that's so cool, one book, but hey, it's one book in Burkina Faso.
You have a fan there now.
Yeah, clearly. Oh, they only bought one book, so they didn't buy like the whole series. But I think my personal soapbox right now is looking beyond the US, beyond the UK, beyond Canada, to the English-speaking rest of the world, and also the translation stuff. So what do you see happening? Like, which countries would you pick as the next big ones to kind of focus on in 2014-2015?
Well, that's the beautiful thing, because we have established amazing partnerships. I mean, Kobo just finished our annual partner summit, which actually this year took place in South Africa. And leaders, we have some of the most intelligent, smart business leaders around the world that met with our executives together. So the heads of all of these partners that I talked about in all the different countries were there, and they spent several days together doing something that's never been done before. Typically, you know, the head of a book company in Canada, the head of a book company in the US, the UK, would focus only on their market. And they do that. But Kobo has brought them all together to share with each other, to help each other, because that's what we do really, really best, is sort of exercise that says, you do this really, really well, we do that really, really well. How can we work together and help each other out? So that partner summit that just happened last week is sort of indicative of the way that we are going to continue to expand and not just focus on one territory, but focus on as many, because we can work with our partners to help that exposure. So I can't really predict which of the territories are going to take off. I think they're all going to continue to grow. I'm really, really excited about the things that we've done so far. I'm really, really excited about the things that I know that are coming. And you're on the right path. You're looking globally. You've always been a few steps ahead of the curve. So I think authors should follow what you're doing and pay close attention, because you recognize that. Now, translations, we just, I'm sure you've heard, we just did a deal where we worked collaboratively with Bella Andre, who had wanted to get some French translations for her Lucy Kevin books. And so we said, well, we sat down and sort of, you know, whiteboarded the concept and said, well, what if we do this? Why don't we try that? And we came up with something that works really well for her, works really, really well for us. And so far it's doing really, really well because we have a strong presence in France with Fnac, and we have a good customer base that loves great romance. And in Ontario, or in Quebec, I should say, which is a French province in Canada, we also have a thirsty customer base just looking for more great things to read. And so that was a great opportunity. Will we be doing the same sort of thing in other languages with other authors? Of course, we want to look at what can we do to best serve our authors and our customers and bring them together, because that's really our goal, right? Is to bring these people together, because at the end of the day, that's our job, putting those books in those digital hands.
And I really see those language markets as underserved. And I mean, you talk about French there, and, you know, I mentioned Africa, and there's plenty of, you know, people in Africa who speak French, you know. I think this is what people need to remember. So, or Spanish, you know, half of the US speaks Spanish now, right? You know, German, when I looked at German across the world, you know, it's spoken in a lot of places. So I think people really need to be aware that it's not just the country that is the national, you know, speaking. It's a global thing. And of course, you know, it means people can read in whatever language they like across the world. So do you see then, just on that other side, that authors in these language-based countries, whatever, I mean, French authors self-publishing in French, has self-publishing taken off in other countries?
It's interesting, because I think self-publishing is starting to take off in other countries the way that it had started to take off a few years ago in, you know, in the US and the UK. So that, you know, traditionally English-speaking when you think of them as English-speaking territories. It's really fascinating, because now, the one thing I've noticed is that in certain territories, like, and I think in the UK is a good example, the publishers are a lot more aggressive and they're paying a lot more attention. And so the old trick, you know, of making your book 99 cents to get some attention, well, the publishers are doing it too. Mm-hmm. So the question I ask then is, how do you differentiate yourself when everyone's doing exactly what you're doing? How do you become different? And that's where, you know, I look at what Dean Wesley Smith and Christine Catherine Rush are doing, is they're basically saying, I write good books. I've been doing this for 30 years. It's quality. I'm not compromising. This is how much you pay for it. And they're doing very, very successfully. That's the path that they've chosen, and they work. I really, really think, I'm going to get back to pricing again, but I think paying attention to pricing in different territories is critical. You can't just go with a single, you know, this is the price that works in the US. Well, your price in the UK may be completely different. Mm. And it may be different among different retailers. So you may have to find that sweet spot between this retailer and that retailer to find that exact target where you get the maximum volume on on all of the platforms.
And what you're saying about the countries, Germany right now, we've just seen the top 10 books on the Amazon Kindle store all self-published because the German publishers have not yet sort of price matched with low prices. So in Germany right now, you're able to undercut other publishers, which is great because I've got two books in German coming out this year.
You're going to let me know soon as they're in pre-order, because you can set them up for pre-order, because we can we're really excited about those.
I'll talk to you about that separately, so definitely pricing is very important. And in fact, I've been direct on Kobo since you guys started, but I've just pulled my books off the other the middlemen and gone direct to iBookstore, because with iBookstore as well you can do all the pricing with the markets, and I think this is one of the biggest mistakes people are making, is not adjusting their pricing per market. So on that, another challenge for Kobo, keeping you honest, Mark.
Of course.
iBookstore has 51 different pricing possibilities. Kobo does have, I think, 8 or 9?
Eight right now, yeah.
Yeah. So will you be looking to expand your country pricing?
Yes, definitely. I mean, that's an important element. We've always been proud of that. And there are certain currencies that we need to adjust for. There's some significant development work to do that per territory, because it's a combination of 4 different teams working on it together. So it's not just the desire of me and my dev team for Kobo Writing Life, but lining up the work we have to do with the work that 3 other teams have to do. And that honestly has been the biggest challenge towards adding them. And then, of course, because our platform is in 5 different languages, so we have to develop it and make it available in English, and then we have to do it. So it's on the it's definitely on the plans. What I don't have is a time, because there's a lot of moving parts. But no, definitely, we recognize it's critical for you to be able to control your pricing in those territories, and we want to give authors the ability to do that. So definitely something that look forward to. And Apple's doing some cool stuff. Other people go, hey, we should do that. We've done some cool stuff, and then you've seen Amazon change the way that they pay people, for example. I mean, we all keep each other pushing the envelope, which is great for writers and great for readers everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. So I also wanted to ask about something else I just saw, which is Kobo Next. Can I ask about Kobo Next? What is that? I just saw that.
Oh, you did, eh? So that is part of, I hired Shayna from our merchandising team, and Shayna is sort of our head for the Kobo Writing Life team, the head person who is kind of like a sales rep to our merchandisers team. So just if you're not familiar how bookstores work, Kobo works very much like a bookstore, because that's what we are. We have merchandisers for the UK and Australia and New Zealand and Canada and the US and Germany and Spain and Brazil. We have merchandisers. Actually, our merchandising team is probably our biggest global team. We have people merchandising their stores. Shayna is like a sales rep, because sales reps, Hachette and Simon & Schuster and Random House and Penguin have sales reps that meet with our merchandisers, think of them as buyers, and say, hey, here's our new catalog. These are all the cool books that are coming out. Oh, you should check out this and this and this. These are probably the best ones, because each catalog has 1,000 titles in it, and they pick 10 that are the picks. Shayna does the same thing by going through the Kobo Writing Life catalog and looking at incoming titles and forthcoming titles that are pre-order, and saying, hey, merchandiser, you should really check out Joanna Penn. She's an amazing author from the UK. And look, she's got a new book coming out next month, and it's already up on pre-order. You should spotlight that. So Shayna is your sales rep. Kobo Next is a reflection that we can't always get all the great titles on the main page all the time. So how do we have a curated experience that says, and you'll notice that Kobo Next doesn't say, hey, these are independent books from independent authors. Mm-hmm. We don't want to discriminate against traditionally published authors. So we want to provide the best possible books that we think are amazing and need to be spotlighted. So Kobo Next is really discover the next great read from an author you may not have heard of. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of titles get up there. And Shayna has, as you've probably seen, she's got the carousels of the different categories. She's got a weekly editor's pick that she changes out. And so far, putting stuff in that has helped, for some strange reason, elevate sales for those books.
No, fantastic. I think any of these type of lists are a good thing, and you just never know how people are going to discover you. And I think patience is another key with any platform like iBookstore. Like I said, I pulled everything off and now I'm starting again fresh with iBookstore with no history, with nothing. And it's a pain, but you know, all of us have years ahead of us, don't we? So if people aren't on Kobo right now, they can get on it, but you know, clearly it takes a while for everything to filter on through. So that's important. Now, I want to just ask you before we finish. I recently wrote a post about A Tale of Two Author Brands, which was my own issues being The Creative Pen and JF Pen. Now, I write quite dark stuff, and you do as well. You also, you know, your stuff is definitely darker than mine, I think, and has a little bit of a naughty edge as well sometimes. So I wonder, how do you balance Mark Leslie and Mark Fame and Kobo and being an author?
I'm one of the luckiest people in the world. I get to do one of the coolest jobs. I get to work with authors, which is what I would do anyways because I am an author. I get to, like right now I'm at a workshop on the West Coast with Dean Wesley Smith and Christine Catherine Rush. As an author participating, but also as a Kobo representative, sharing insights and getting to know writers and finding out, you know, feedback. I sat down yesterday for lunch with an author who was sharing, you know, what's working, what's not working, you know, asking questions. Well, what's next in the development plans? And, oh, okay, well, this is what we're looking at. Is this important to you or is that? So on the Kobo side of things, it's amazing. And I'm constantly throwing hats on and off. Oftentimes when I get asked to go and speak somewhere, like here, I'm not sure if they're asking me to come as an author or if they're asking me to come as Kobo's. So I have to ask, what do you want me to talk about? Do you want me to talk about my author experience? Or do you want to talk to me about my Kobo? No, fortunately, when I talk to authors about Kobo, I can talk about my author experience because I self-published my first book in 2004. Mm. I've been in the self-publishing business for 10 years now. I know the side of the bookseller. I know that side. So I have always taken advantage of that from my writer perspective. The challenge, I think, is because I write horror. Horror is not a popular genre, but I'm passionate about it. Maybe there's something dark and disturbing about me, but the stories I tell tend to always look for the shadows. And that's just something that I've always had with me. So what I try not to take advantage of is I try not to take advantage of the fact that I'm, you know, in charge of the self-publishing program at Kobo. So you're not going to see Mark Leslie books constantly featured on the main page. And I'm very, very leery about that. Sometimes the merchandisers will take one of my books and promote it. And I go, oh, don't do that. That looks like nepotism. So that's a challenge. The other thing I should share is my self-publishing that I do and traditional publishing, and I was embracing both of them all the way up. They complement one another. I have a great publishing deal with two different publishers right now. I've got a third book coming out with Dern, which is a mid-sized Canadian publisher, and they know what I do for a living, which would, if I worked for the world's longest river, would mean I'm trying to take over and kill publishers. But I work for Kobo, which is a collaborative company, and even though I'm working directly with authors, I'm not doing it to jeopardize publishing. I'm doing it to help enhance publishing. So my self-published titles help sell my Dundurn titles, Haunted Hamilton, Spooky Sudbury, and I'm working on Tomes of Terror, Haunted Bookstores and Libraries, which is due at my publisher April 1st. And talk about merging my two biggest passions in the world, creepy ghost stories and bookstores and libraries. Are you kidding me? This is like a dream book. So they recognize that when I push my self-published titles, it helps sell my traditionally published titles. People buy my traditionally published titles and then go, oh, look, I like this guy's stuff. Oh, look, Bumps in the Night, four, you know, campfire ghost stories. Maybe I'll check out his fiction. And they really complement one another. So I don't divide them too much. And often when I'm at business meetings at Kobo, I do take the author's side because nobody else is taking the author's side. That's why they hired me. And when I'm at a writer's conference, you know, yesterday we were talking about the craft of writing and stuff like that. And every once in a while, someone will ask a question, well, how does that sell in ebooks? And then I can put my Kobo hat back on and say, oh, this is how it sells. So I divide it. I try not to take advantage, but I do take advantage of the opportunity it gives me to see multiple perspectives. I mean, I'm just having a blast is all I can say. And I hope I don't confuse people too much. I do have Mark Leslie, which everyone can spell and pronounce. And then I have Mark LaFave, who become, you know, thanks to Johnny and Dave and Sean at Self-Publishing Podcast, I've become Mark from Kobo. And so I actually use that now. I was like, just call me Mark from Kobo.
Yeah.
And you'll be okay.
Yeah, no, I think it comes back to what you said at the beginning about being a real person. And, you know, I think it's nice. I always like to, you know a bit about you. And, you know, I've read several of your books. And in the same way that I actually think people who read our fiction know us, know a side of us very well that sometimes even our parents and our siblings don't know. You can get that real insight into a part of us by reading fiction, I think. So anyway, if anyone wants to try Mark's, it's Mark Leslie, and I'll link to Mark's books in the show notes. So Mark, where can people find Kobo, and where can they find Mark Leslie online?
All right, so Kobo is Kobo.com. Kobo.com/writinglife is where you can log into the portal. We do have a really amazing blog, KoboWritingLife.com, which is really an excuse for us to do spotlights on authors and link to their books and increase their SEO and talk about the craft and business of writing. And that's really been a lot of fun, that engagement. And my own website is markleslie.ca, where you can link to my blog, and I'm at Mark Leslie on Twitter, and Kobo Writing Life is at Kobo Writing Life on Twitter. And there's the multiple hats.
Thanks so much for your time, Mark. That was brilliant as usual.
Thanks, Jonna. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.